Blog Talk Radio.
On the Edge, real talk about real issues.
Welcome to the On the Edge show with Katie Barnett and friends. I'm your host, Katie Barnett. Okay, happy Tuesday, everybody. We are here in the second day of a new week. New York, it is cold, but getting better. Hopefully, we can enjoy this reprieve for a little bit longer. Okay, to Barry Mason, formerly of 98.7 Kiss FM Radio, of New York City, currently with isolradio.com. You can hear Barry do his thing on Saturdays from 7 to 10 p.m., again on Sundays from 6 to 10 p.m. And when he is not on the radio, he is live and in person doing the best of live R&B events all over New York City. He has a birthday coming up, and I'm going to say about 10 days in advance, happy birthday, and I'll keep saying that to you. And to my team, Lady Diamond Elaine Yeves, very soon she'll be back, ladies and gentlemen. We're very, very happy to hear that. To Monster Miles and DJ Dome Record Rodney Williams also will return. And to that awesome, awesome panelist and activist out in Toledo, Ohio, that you guys have here on almost every single segment, Deacon Zeddy Williams, we want to wish him the best as he's dealing with a family tragedy. At this moment, we are praying for his granddaughter to pull through, and we are praying for him to be okay and his family. So much, much blessings and many best wishes to you, sir. I want to say thank you to my social media supporters out there, the On the Edge Show listeners group. You guys have been fantastic since we got started. I want to thank you all very much for your continuous support, to our pre-broadcast support and everything. I want to thank Linda Miller and the Black Love and Conversations group, Mark, and the Black History Suppress and Real World Black News and Discussions group, Marvin Young with the Capitalist Pin group, and of course, our very own Professor Carlton Jones with the What About Us group. All of you have been phenomenal, phenomenal contributors to the pre-broadcast topic questions as well as bringing me community connections. So I want to thank you all very much. Ladies and gentlemen, we are now at 22,597 people. I want to thank all of you for hitting the archives, the live streams, for hitting the inbox. You guys have been fantastic, you know, through all of our healthy debates and our opposing opposition. So I want to thank you all very much for doing that. Now, tonight, everybody, we have our very special guest, a returning panelist, a wonderful, awesome, awesome lawyer who knows his stuff, and he's a tough New Yorker gone Floridian. I want to thank Mr. Kenneth Foote, who will be joining us a little bit later, to give us some insight as to our topic tonight. What does this ruling mean? And tonight's topic, everyone, is Supreme Court says, who needs a warrant? Just a suspicion will do. Now, all of us have been up and buzzing about this new U.S. Supreme Court ruling that police no longer need a warrant to search your home. Now, what that means is they're really specifically quoting special cases where, you know, at one point the victim was actually in deep danger, and because the primary tenant of the house or property denied police access by saying, no, you cannot search my home, they weren't able to do it without waiting for a judge to sign a warrant. Now, the ruling states that if there are two occupants there and the police believe that there's something going on, that they don't need a warrant, all they need is one of those two people or more to say, yes, you can come into the property. Now, either way, considering all of the late rampant rash of news stories that have been coming out against police with brutality, with some of us know, if it's not obvious, there's been racial tensions. There's been definite miscarriages of justice when it comes to certain people and the cops have kind of been getting away with a lot of stuff. That has been your main concern in the pre-broadcast topic discussion questions, especially in the African-American community. So the question we have on the table tonight is this actually designed, or will this actually help those victims that they used in their explanation, or is this yet another avenue that's going to allow roguish or corrupt cops to continue their horrible practices? What I want to ask Mr. Flint tonight is, in light of the Supreme Court having made this ruling, and in light of the climate in the news with cops doing things that's out of their realm or out of ethics, have they in turn added some buffer or some extra restrictions on how the cops can now use this new authority to offset the major things that have been happening already with cops against the African-American community and, of course, the minorities as well? So that is the question I want to hear from you guys. If any of you have any questions, Mr. Foote will be here. Call in, ask questions. You all know who he is. You've been hearing his commercial for about 4 or 5 months now. So let's get started, okay? Well, you know how this goes, everybody. Right before the break, I give you a little bit of a musical break. Word from our sponsors, and we will be back to get this party going, okay? Today, I am going to be going out with Miss Kelly Clarkson and Stronger. When I get back after a word from our sponsors, we will get our panelist discussion started, okay? Don't go away, everybody. Keep it locked right here with Katie. Be back in a few.
Feels warmer sleeping here alone. You know I dream in color and do the things I want. You think you got the best of me, think you've had the last laugh, bet you think that everything good is gone. Think you left me broken down, think that I'll come running back. Doesn't kill you, makes you stronger.
Stronger, stand a little taller, doesn't mean I'm lonely. New York. There's no place like it. You figure that out when you find yourself in a bit of trouble while vacationing or visiting in Florida. And Florida cops are sure as heck not like New York City cops. You're feeling more than put out or simply just confused with it all. But you want justice. You need it to be right, and you want someone who understands where you're coming from. You need Kenneth Foote, attorney at law. Graduate of St. John's University and Florida Stetson University, he'll make sure you're back on track and everything's straightened away. Driving violations, personal injury, drug charges, he's here to work with you as well as for you. Leave nothing to chance. K.L. Foote, attorneys at law, 877-90-FOOTE or klfoote.com. Kenneth Foote, the New Yorker to contact in Florida.
The On the Edge Show with Katie Barnett and friends, the show that gives you real talk about real issues, needs your help. Katie and the gang are seeking out individuals and local business sponsors to help fund their projects for youth and minority communities to become re-empowered, featuring programs like the Spread Your Wings Showcase, offering free advertising to up-and-coming entrepreneurs, Youth Day giving public school grades 4 to 12 a taste of the arts, and All Hands on Deck, our new writer's showcase. On the Edge is looking to give back to our communities by giving our youth a future. Your small contribution will make a difference. Individuals or small businesses can choose to be a sponsor for any amount of time. And businesses can also choose to advertise with us at very reasonable rates. Choose any type of show sponsorship and you just may be a sponsor for a life. Visit us at Facebook at facebook.com On the Edge Show for more information on how you can be a part of our vision. We hope to see you there.
Now, back with more On the Edge.
Welcome back, everybody, to the On the Edge Show with Katie Barnett and friends. I'm your host, Katie Barnett. Okay, it is showtime, people. All right, tonight's episode is Supreme Court says, who needs a warrant? Just the suspicion will do. And we are speaking, of course, about that high up in arms article that has been released, quoting the U.S. Supreme Court's ruling by a 6-3 vote that police warrant ethics or practices, I should say now, have been changed to where they don't need to wait for a judge to sign a warrant if, A, they feel there's a suspicion after being called to someone's home or happen to hear some disturbances, and, two, there is more than one occupant in the home. Usually it used to be that if one person said no, that was it, especially if it was the primary owner or tenant. Now it's like this. If there are two people in the house or more and one person says yes but the other one says no, the police don't need to wait for a warrant to let them spit it out, pretty much. They can just go in based on that one person's consent. Now, what has been coming up quite frequently in the responses today was this. In light of all that we have seen, especially with the two high-profile murder cases where the Stand Your Ground law, and we all know who that is, Zimmerman and Dunn, the Stand Your Ground law pretty much has the same precedent as if we suspect trouble out here in the other parts of America. Now, Stand Your Ground law, as we all know, as with the African-American community's definite worries and fears and apprehensions about this, is this. Stand Your Ground states that if you feel that there's a danger, you don't have to leave where you are or run away. You can stand your ground and pretty much defend yourself. Now, we have seen that this has become a joke, a fatal joke, but a joke nonetheless, because what it is now is that in Florida, pretty much anybody could say, well, I saw him, and he looked like, and I felt like he was going to threaten my life. So, you know, I took my gun out and blew him away. Or in the other case, I took my gun out and shot 10 times at a retreating car because the danger was in the car, and it was leaving, but I was in danger. Okay, that's what it all boiled down to. Now, here we go. Here is not Florida, so let's give Florida a break this time around, ladies and gentlemen. Now, it's other parts of the world, which means, will this actually help the type of victims that the U.S. Supreme Court quoted, which one was Georgia versus Randolph, which was a domestic violence situation where the cops arrived and the primary owner said, you cannot come in, but the other person said, you can, and they walked in and they searched the house. Well, the Supreme Court in that case said that regardless of what the other occupant said, the police should have known that the primary person said no, and that was it, that they should have waited and got a warrant. Well, this Supreme Court ruling says, to hell with that, no way. Now, what they're saying is, what if there's a domestic violence victim and, like, the primary owner is the abuser? What if there's somebody hiding out in the house and maybe both of them have to say, no, don't come in because they're under threat? Very valid reasons and very good reasons for that U.S. Supreme Court ruling to stand. However, in light of all that has been happening, we cannot close our eyes to it. We cannot pretend it didn't happen. We cannot pretend we don't see the facetious garbage that's in it, in the rulings that in the cases that we have mentioned. Marissa Alexander right now is facing a 60-year sentence for using Stand Your Ground law, and they're going to try to dig and find one thing she may have done that can stick her with this, which has nothing to do with that. So the question we have tonight is, A, what does a Supreme Court ruling actually mean from someone who can explain it in the way that it is written? Meaning to us, it's all Greek because it's legal terms, but this young man knows the Greek. So that's number one. Number two, one of the main issues and questions that came up is, and concerns, is that now that this is in place, it's just going to give these roguish, racist, or otherwise corrupt cops more of an avenue to walk in and just pretty much say, I'm coming in because of a domestic violence. Now that I'm here, I spotted marijuana on the table, so now it's another case as well. That is what we want to ask today. So let's bring in our panelists for the evening and see what we have going on. Welcome to the show, caller. You're on the air. Hello? Okay, when they get back in, we will finish. So the concern is, are we in danger more or less with this, or are there benefits to this? So that is the question that's on the table. As I said, I am expecting Attorney Kenneth Foote. You have heard him before on our previous segment about the Michael Dunn verdict, so he was very, very wonderful with that. Do have another panelist coming in, so let's bring them in at the moment and see what they think of the situation. Welcome to the show, caller. You're on the air.
Hey, this is Carlos Utterby Jones, also known as Stalo Jenkins. I'm calling from D.C.
Hey, how are you, Stalo? All right,
hey,
well,
how's it going?
I would like to know what you feel about tonight's topic.
Well, I haven't really looked into the ruling or the language of it or anything, but just from what I do know about it, I would say that this is another. I already know of so many times that the police have violated the rights of citizens on the soil, and they do it, and they do it, and they do it, and they always find a way to justify it. And it's funny because just recently, I believe, a woman's husband was killed because of a domestic violence call, and the domestic violence call was actually between her and her daughter, and when they got there, they charged the black man and murdered him on his front lawn. I saw it on Facebook. But I say that to say, even I know of instances here in D.C. where the police have, with warrants, kicked in doors and shot teenage girls in the face and found no paraphernalia, no anything, killed people for no apparent reason just because they did have a warrant. And they ruled certain things justified. Now, moving forward, if this ruling is allowed to pass, and I hope that the whole concept of checks and balances is true in this country, and I hope that we do have a judicial branch, an executive branch, and a legislative branch, and all of them work in such a way that there's a check and balance. And regardless of this ruling, this is a violation of every human right. And I only say this because at the present time, I could see law enforcement using this in a way that is very discriminatory in non-English speaking communities, in Hispanic communities. Now, I could see them manipulating language in such a way and manipulating people that don't really know their own rights which they do so often anyway, even without this new empowerment they have with the ruling, I can see them manipulating this in such a way that they are filling these empty private jails with immigrant Hispanics, non-immigrant Hispanics, and really just this is all for money, and this is all for human trafficking. This is a disgusting. What's disgusting is the fact that the law enforcement in America, who's supposed to protect and serve, are really being used for human trafficking in the United States of America. Did anyone know that here in D.C., the only federal state prison to ever close down, from my knowledge, and I know this was true at some point recently, but if it's changed at this point, that's another thing. But the federal state penitentiary here, Lawton, was terrible. I mean, there was supposedly riots and this, and the conditions of the prisoners were so bad that they were petitioning the president, and it was ridiculous. It was so many black men in D.C. were in Lawton, and women, and women were also equally, almost not equally incarcerated, but there was a lot of black women incarcerated in D.C. as well at a certain time, And the thing is, what they did for what, and I think they itemized it, and it was in a documentary that came out like in the 90s when I was growing up, and it was like itemized at like $5,000 a head. Each inmate who was all pretty much a D.C. resident, most likely a black man at the time, was then sold to other federal state institutions, and that one was just, you know, the only ones who ever closed in the history of the United States. And that was total human trafficking. These people were sold off to Arizona, California, prisons all over the place. Now, at the end of the day, I do wonder, you know, what does this whole ruling mean about the empowerment of the individual that is supposedly giving the police the authority to enter? So what is this saying now? Like, I'm confused at that. Because if a person doesn't own the property, I don't understand how they can supersede anything. But I can see them changing the law, but this seems like something that leads to something else to me.
Well, I'm going to first find out if our lawyer is in, and there's another panelist coming in, so just hang on a minute. Mr. Foote, are you there?
Yes, Katie, how are you?
Hi, okay, I couldn't get you in earlier. Hang on 1 minute. Let me bring our other panelists in, and I'm going to give you the floor because you were supposed to have it first. So hang on just a second. Welcome to the show, Cole. You're on the air.
No, I mean, I want to hear it from someone who understands the system, who can explain to me what's the difference before the court ruling and after the court ruling. I have no problem waiting.
Okay. All right, Mr. Foote, I need you to clear up. Well, first, the question I have is, A, what does the ruling actually mean? Okay, what does it pertain to? And then I'll have another question after, so go ahead.
Okay, well, just as a basic so that everyone understands, this deals with the Fourth Amendment of the Constitution, which states that the police should have, you know, a search warrant before that they can come into anyone's home, and that Bill of Rights prohibits unreasonable search and seizures, requires a warrant obtained by a magistrate or a judge, and it has to be supported by probable cause before you can go into someone's home. Now, there's exceptions to that rule that have to do with if, one, someone gives consent and says, come on in, then you don't need a warrant. The other one is in motor vehicles. It's a little different than your home. The police have a little more ability to go into the car based on certain things. For example, you know, if they smell marijuana burning, that gives them probable cause to go ahead and search the car. And the reason why cars are not as, you know, it's not as strong as a home because the car can move. You can get rid of it. It's very hard to remove a home, you know. If evidence is in plain view, I believe a caller, someone said earlier, you know, if the cops, you open the door and the cops see a pile of cocaine sitting on your living room table, that's in plain view. They can do something about that. The other thing is someone getting rid of evidence, or evidence can be moved or destroyed, as you see in the movies, people running in the bathroom and flushing. So that's the basic thing, that the cops can't come into your house. Government shouldn't be able to come into your house. This is a very sacred rule in our country, that people can be free in their home and have privacy, and so that the government cannot come in unless they have a search warrant, and that search warrant has to be based on probable cause. The officer has to swear to it in front of the judge, and then the judge has to decide whether or not the warrant should be issued. Part of the history of that is because when cops are in the heat of battle, they run up to a house, they're all riled up. They're supposed to take a minute of pause, and when you get to a judge who's sitting there, that's your check and balance. That person checks those police officers out, looks at their probable cause, look at their affidavit, and then decides whether or not a warrant should be issued or not. So with this case, with regard to the home, and I read the opinion. It's about 19 pages with all the different Supreme Court justices talking into the your lady caller who just mentioned what was the law beforehand. Katie, as you stated, there's the Georgia versus Randolph case that was a domestic issue. And the court pretty much said when there's multiple people in the house, you know, if one person objects and that person is present at the house, the cops can't go in. They got to go get a warrant. And in the case that we are talking about today, the more recent opinion, Fernandez versus California, well, the whole issue there is, you know, this guy actually just robbed somebody. You know, he stole $400 after he watched him cash a check, had his boys beat him up. He was part of a gang, they said. And then he runs through an alley and goes into the apartment and apparently beat up his old lady in the house, Miss Rojas.
Right.
And when the cops learned where the house was, they banged on the door. They saw her. They spoke with her. She said that no one else was there. And when they were getting ready to come in, he came out. He was in his boxer shorts and said, "You cannot come in this house." All right, so they argued that Randolph should apply, you know, and that they shouldn't have come in the house. But when they looked at Ms. Rojas, she's standing there bleeding. It looked like she just had a fight. She had blood on her hands, blood on her shirt. There was a four-year-old in there as well. So one of the exceptions is if the police need to make sure that everyone is okay and there's an emergency situation, that's an exception where they can go in the house. They're not going to search for anything. They're going to make sure everyone is okay when they go in the house. So
right.
Mr. Fernandez says, "You can't come in the house." At that point, they had probable cause to put him under arrest for the domestic violence that had just occurred, and they took him away. So the issue in the case, he wanted all the evidence suppressed that they found. So what happened was Ms. Rojas, an hour later after he was taken to jail, let them come in the house, and they found a short-barreled shotgun, some ammunition, a knife, and some drug paraphernalia. And they sent him away for 14 years. So his lawyers appealed that and said, "Listen, you shouldn't have come in there. You shouldn't have come in the house. I told you I didn't want you in the house." And pretty much the courts didn't go with that story because they said in the Randolph case, when you stand there and say you can't come in, you have to remain there. So
right.
In this case, the government argued he wasn't there no more. And he said, "Well, I'm not there anymore because y'all arrested me." And that was the whole issue as whether or not the cops just removed him so they can get around the search warrant. So in this case, pretty much, you know, reading the transcripts, Ms. Rojas gave a couple of stories, but it looked like they came back and wanted to get in the house. They didn't try and get a warrant, and they said she consented. And as I said earlier, if someone gives consent, you don't need a warrant. But
right.
Her testimony was that they threatened to take her kid away if she didn't give them, you know, that they had coerced her into giving consent. And, of course, they wrote in the report, "Oh, she gave us consent." I tend to kind of believe, I mean, I wasn't there, but I know some of the practices when it comes with kids, they always threaten the mother, "We're going to take your kids if you don't do this. We're going to take your kids if you don't do that." So she acquiesced, let them in the house, and that's how they found evidence.
Right.
The court said in this case pretty much it's a little different in that, you know, we have to make sure everyone is okay and that her rights have to be protected. So if she says you can come in and the other guy says you can't, she also has rights as well. And that's where the discussion, six of the justices agreed with Justice Alito writing the opinion, and three justices disagreed. And what you find interesting is the court is made up of six men and three women. The three women, Justice Ginsburg, Justice Sotomayor, and Justice Kagan, didn't agree with this. They said, no, you need a warrant, and you could have gotten a warrant. There was no emergency where you had to run through that house, especially when you came back an hour later when the guy was gone. So right. The issue that they said, Justice Ginsburg pretty much said that this is dangerous because it's creating a slippery slope where we are eroding the Fourth Amendment, which is sacred. But once we start chipping away at it, okay, you're going to have some officers, and I'm not saying them all, but you got some officers out there that are going to read into this and think that it's okay to get around the warrant requirement by saying, oh, well, one person gave me consent, I'm going in the house.
Now, that's the question I have. Now, see, I agree with a lot of things where this ruling would actually benefit people. I mean, especially myself having been a victim of abuse, and, you know, there is a fear factor involved. First of all, police create two things, either a sense of fear or a sense of safety. Okay, well, lately, the corrupt practices of what you see more of with police nowadays, Mr. Foote, you know that we cannot deny it. And now that's starting to become, will this now give those type of cops the right to do just what you described, you know, make up an excuse to bring somebody out the house? Now, I agree with this. If they walk in and they see, like you said, Ms. Rojas was bleeding, she had blood on her hands and everything, take the guy away, because sometimes victims can't speak for themselves. Even when they know they're being hurt, they don't know how to fight their abusers. Okay, so I agree with, you know what, I'm not even going to ask you whether or not you want to press charges, I'm going to take them in. Okay, that's one. But when it comes now to you invading my home and you're starting to threaten my child if you don't get access, it's starting to look like there's an ulterior motive. So my question to you is this, with this new ruling, okay, has the Supreme Court put in place something to enforce ethical practices on the part of the police? Do they have to now really prove themselves, not just about the obvious immediate situation, but now, like you said, what the hell were they doing going back there an hour later? Now they need evidence to do what? Shouldn't this just have been a domestic violence case? You know,
well,
like
they obviously wanted to get in the house. They weren't. I'm not going to say they weren't worried about the domestic violence. They just it happened to be convenient that this lady was standing there bleeding, because what they really was going after is the robbery that just happened, and so they wanted to get that evidence. And when they got in the house, obviously they got the gun, the knife, they found ammunition and paraphernalia. But to answer your question, the Fourth Amendment has some protections in it. In 1914, a case called Weeks versus United States, there's something that was put in place called the exclusionary rule, which means if the cops go in and they violate the Fourth Amendment by either not getting a warrant or lying or doing something, cutting the corners to get some evidence, that evidence is thrown out. And that's what people see on TV all the time when they hear in court a motion to suppress evidence. It's usually based on the cops doing something wrong, and that is called the exclusionary rule. So there are checks and balances in the Fourth Amendment that if the government doesn't act proper with cops either lying or obtaining evidence illegally against the Constitution, the Fourth Amendment allows, under the Weeks versus United States case, allows the court to listen to evidence and then throw out that evidence, no matter what it is. It's called the fruit of the poisonous tree. If you get in the house and you get in that house on the false pretenses or lie or make up something or don't even get a warrant at all, anything you find can be thrown out.
Right. Well, before I continue to the next question, please let me first say thank you very much for being here. Ken, I know how busy you are, but I actually value your input because the things that I hear from a lot of lawyers, it sounds like French to me. And a lot of times lawyers tend to seem to protect the legal system whether they know it's corrupt or not. It's like everybody's, you know, the code blue and, you know, everybody's one big band against the people even though they're supposed to be for the people, and it's a lot. But it's very refreshing to hear from someone who knows the Greek, okay, but says what is, you know, and I appreciate that from you, definitely, for sure. Now, the next thing is, do you think, I mean, you know that in light of everything that's going on, we spoke about, you know, some injustice or confusing practices in previous cases when you were on with me the last time. It's really hard to cover your eyes to that type of stuff. Now, like what we just spoke about a real victim needing protection with the police making a legal judgment call. Okay, it's in the best interest of a victim, and I can tell you once again, speaking from a victim standpoint, you know, people don't understand that a lot of times it's hard for us to go after what we really want and need because we're so used to whatever it is that we've been used to. You know, it may not be a good life, but it's the life you're used to. It's hard for you to sit there and look at this person and say, this man loved me or this woman loved me and they're doing this. You spend a lot of years really trying to convince yourself it's got to be something you did. It's got to be something you need to change. So a lot of times somebody on the outside who's removed from the situation does have to speak for you by whichever way it matters. But in this case, because there's been so much of these high-profile corruptive practices, that benefit to the person who really needs it is really overshadowed by now these corrupt people are sitting there and they're going to have another legal avenue to go in and pretty much shortcut. So do you feel that this is a better or worse thing? I mean,
any time. I can just give you a little bit of my background. As you said earlier, I'm from Brooklyn, New York, Crown Heights and Bed-Stuy, grew up in Queens. In the 80s, I was with the NYPD in the Auxiliary Division at the 115 Precinct. So I walked the streets. I rode the trains back when the Guardian Angels first came out and, you know, back when crack started coming out and, you know, all those things like that. You know, so I know what it is to wear a uniform. I was a prosecutor, a district attorney, you know, up there, down here in Clearwater, Florida for a while. So I put people in jail. And now I'm a defense attorney. And so I'm not for one side or the other. I'm a person that's for the Constitution. So to answer your question, I don't like this decision because it starts to erode away at the Fourth Amendment. And that's the only protection that we have, you know, as citizens. You know, it's okay when we see something on TV and someone is in handcuffs, but when it's your family or someone else and your rights have been violated, you want someone to be able to defend you and at least follow the Constitution. So my problem with this decision is that slowly but surely they're making exceptions and chipping away at that basic right. And, you know, one of the justices was saying in the opinion who agreed with it, in Justice Alito's opinion, I believe it was Justice Scalia who was saying, well, we have a lot of technology today, but, you know, it's kind of a burden to make police officers go and get this. It takes a lot of time. And you know what? Once you start hearing language like that, you know, that's a slippery slope. Where do we stop? Before you know it, they're kicking in your door because they heard something or someone told them something, and they're in the middle of your house at 2 in the morning. So I disagree. I think with all of the technology that we have today, not like in the old days where you had to go and wait for a judge or find someone in the middle of the night. They have Skype where they can get to a judge. They have electronic media. They have all kind of things that we have today on Facebook and everything else. They have the technology to be able to get a warrant. And people ask, well, how does that work? Well, if you think there's something in that house, you get everybody out of the house, you put a police officer in front of it, and you go get your warrant. There's not really a reason to go and kick in that door, but it's just easier to do it. And in big cities, New York, Chicago, L.A., it takes a lot to go and find a judge and get paperwork and all that. So if they can cut a corner, you know, they're going to try to do it. And the first way of doing it, now, don't get me wrong, if someone gives consent and says, yes, you can search my house or you can search my car, then there's no need for a warrant. The issue that I found as a defense attorney is that a lot of my clients come and say, that, well, they kind of threaten him. You know, I talked to one gentleman tonight. All he had was a suspended license, and they were threatening him, we're going to take you to jail. Let us go in the car. If you don't let us go in the car, we're going to take you to jail. So the guy's standing there in the street, what do you think he's going to do? He's going to say, go ahead and look in the car. But when you get the police report, none of that's in there. The cop says, he voluntarily gave me consent. I'm like, yeah, okay, some people do. But the reason is a lot of people don't know the law. You know, we learn law from TV or Facebook or anything like that. Everybody needs to know their basic constitutional rights. When you get pulled over in a car, they said you were speeding. Okay, give me the speeding ticket. When you're done with the speeding ticket, I can go on my way. But most people don't know when the officer says, was there anything else in the car I should know about? You mind if I look in it? And people don't know their rights. And it's certainly people of color and young black men, they're not going to say that. You know, they're pretty much going to acquiesce and say whatever you want. They just don't want to get shot, you know. But you don't have to let that person go in your car. I'm sorry, officer, be polite. And says, you know, I have somewhere to go. Now, the next thing he might say is, well, I'll get the dog out and see if, you know, he barks or something like that. So people need to know the law. They need to read it, not get it from their friend or their cousin. You need to kind of at least know the basics of what your rights are, because that's how people get into trouble, because they don't know what their rights are. And so these officers come in and they threaten, okay, well, if you don't let me in the house, I'm going to take the kid. And I think that's why Ms. Rojas eventually let them in the house. She knew where the shotgun was. She knew where everything was. Okay, she probably didn't want to get a man in trouble or whatever, but that's another issue. Is that you have people that, you know, and that is a part of the domestic violence cycle. You know, we are living with people who are breaking the law. You know,
right.
If you're selling drugs out of your house, the cops going to show up. I mean, they don't just magically show up to your house. You're selling drugs out of your house, the cops are going to show up. And so that other tenant that lives in that house is taking a chance with living with someone that got guns in the house and doing drugs. Eventually, something's going to happen where those cops show up. So the first thing is try not to have that type of atmosphere. Try not to be around that environment. If you got kids, try not to have that in the house. But in any event, to get back to this case, the cops should follow the rules. And to answer your question, I think this ruling is a bad ruling because I think it will give those few cops that are out there who like to cut corners, it's going to give them a reason to violate people's constitutional rights.
I agree with you, and funny that you should mention, you know, having things around. I mean, that's, and knowing the law, because that I agree with. A lot of people, like I said, they give in to the sense of fear when they see the police uniform, you know, the jargon and the legal terms and the cop talk, and that's what they do, and naturally a mother with her child. But as far as, like, not having that atmosphere, ladies and gentlemen, that's not law, that's common sense. If you don't want to get in trouble, don't be around trouble. I mean, pretty much that's it. If you can allow someone you're living with, especially if you have children, to indulge in something that you know is going to do nothing but lead you down to a bad path, then part of that is on you. But I will say, I don't agree with the ruling at all, because there's been way too many. First of all, to have that type of power in any normal human mind, you know, you start thinking about all the things you can do with it and cutting corners. And I'm glad that you said the few police officers that are doing it, because, you know, sadly, all you see nowadays is that it looks like all the boys in blue are just rogue cops that shake people down and, you know, beat people up or rape a girl and do whatever, you know. And it takes away from those officers that truly do go into the trees and save the cats and, you know, bring these children home. It's sad because nowadays, especially if you're an African-American parent with a teenage son, you have to tell your child, listen, no longer, you know, or do you just walk up to a cop if you're lost. Now you have to walk up to the cop with your hands spread out to the side. Make sure your fingers are wide open. Make sure you have no bulky pockets. It's a sad situation. Now the Supreme Court just gave them a legal scapegoat.
Mm-hmm. Well, they've always had the ability to do searches. There's a way of doing it. And I will tell you again, you know, in New York with, I don't know how many y'all got now, I know it was over 30,000 or more now, of police officers, the majority of those people are doing their job. And they learn the rules. Everyone makes mistakes, okay? But the problem is, are the ones, those very few, that decide they want to cut corners. They threaten people, you know, they scare people, you know, and they get them to make certain decisions. So another issue is whether the consent was freely and voluntarily given. I think one of your calls had brought up a good point. With different cultures, you know, Hispanic, Asian, different people that don't really know the language, I've had more people, you know, give up their rights and let the cops do whatever they want because they're illegal aliens. You know how many Latinos who are illegals in the country, all right, when I would show up and they see that badge, all they were worrying about was being deported. And I certainly couldn't deport someone if I wanted to. But what happens is they don't know what the rules are. And so when they do see that uniform, they acquiesce. and give over. But a lot of good cops, I will tell you, they'll say, listen, if you don't want me here, you know, just say so, and I'm going to sit right here. We're going to go ahead and get our warrant. That's perfectly fine. You can go ahead and do that. But I think that the opinion now, this decision, possibly can give those people who don't know the law, people assume the cops know the law, all right? And there, a lot of them don't know the law. You know, that's why there are defense attorneys. When we get to court, a lot of cases get thrown out because they do things the wrong way. But I think that this will give some license to some of them now to either trick people or to have one co-tenant against another. The thing that I think really is going to happen is when you have people living together, and I'm not going to pick a side, women or men, but, you know, when women get upset, right then they say, come on in, I'll show you where everything is. And then the
right,
guy
yeah.
gets arrested. Then they talk to him. Then they talk to him at the jail a month later. Say, come on. Then the girl comes back in. Well, they've pressured me. So a lot of time we got to be careful with our emotions, and you know, be careful what we say, because in the heat of the moment, we don't mind picking up that phone, calling the cops. But then when they come in and do their job, all of a sudden, we're saying, oh, he violated the rights. He threw my husband against the wall. But your husband was beating you, you know, 10 minutes before they got there. You know,
I agree
so
with
that.
You.
You know, a lot of times it's confusing for police officers, and the most dangerous call a police officer can go on is a domestic violence call, because that guy can be beating that woman up, and when they come in to restrain him, I've seen it where women will go get a knife and try to stab the cops for beating up the husband. So it's a dangerous situation that is out there, but I believe our homes should be protected, and with this ruling, we're shaving away slowly those rights that we have as American citizens.
And you definitely brought up a great compromise, middle ground alternative when you said that if there is a true, clear, and present danger that the cop can readily observe, they should bring everybody out the house, stand in front of the door, and get that warrant. That way there's absolutely no way that anything could be said differently or anything could be thrown out, because, frankly, corrupt practices, like you said, if most of the cases are getting thrown out, what does it do except cause more issues? You know,
the cases will get thrown out. Judges will see, and judges are pretty much fair. People think that the judges are on the police side or the prosecutor side. If you have a good judge and they're going to listen to the law, and as I would, when I was a prosecutor, telling my cops when they brought me a case to see whether or not I was going to file a charge or not. You know, I had a case where the guys tricked the guy. He was Hispanic and didn't speak English. So the cops, a white cop, said, oh, yeah, he told me he was here to pick up a kilo of cocaine and he didn't receive any compensation for it. And I looked at the cop in court in front of the judge. I said, my client said that? He used that word? Because he doesn't speak English, you know. And the judge looked at him, and they threw out that case, and it was a kilo of cocaine, and that case got thrown out. And what I tell my cops when I was a prosecutor is, do it right the first time. We're going to throw this case out. We're not going to file it. And they're like, what? We found all these drugs. I don't care what you found. If the person's really a bad guy, next time do it right and bring it in, and then you can get a conviction. And so my whole thing is, if someone is doing something wrong, okay, and the cops should do their job, not violate their rights, and then you got to do your time. You did something wrong, you got busted, do your time. The problem
I'm
is
all for that.
That
I'm all for that.
Yeah,
I'm not.
When they start cutting corners and filing charges and piling things on you and pressuring people in your house, if you don't say that he did it, I'm going to take you and we're going to send your kids to social services. We're going to do this and that. That's what I don't agree with. You know, if someone violates the law and you got the evidence, take that evidence and let a jury decide.
Now, see, that's what you say in legal terms, and in layman's terms, I say stop padding your suitcase. If you've got a suitcase full of evidence and you feel it was strong enough to go in, why are you adding all these little fillers that are eventually going to not have anything to do with the case, but it makes your load look bigger?
Right.
You know, and that's something that, like I said, you said it in legal terms. I'm saying it from a person who doesn't know any legal jargon, you know, except whatever I see on court shows, but... You know, with all of that being said, it's you're absolutely right. With you know, don't mishandle your authority. And at the same time, if you are on the opposite end of this, you do the crime, you do the time. I'm all for that. I'm all for that. All right, I have a panelist that wants to come in and I believe ask a question or just pose a thought. So just give me a second and let me see what this is. Paula, you're on the air.
Oh, hey, how's it going? No, I just wanted to ask a question. What I don't understand is, why is this ruling even focused on the warrant issue when the case at hand that we were just talking about, they had probable cause. They saw a bleeding woman, right? Like, they had probable cause, so why is that not being acknowledged, and why is it being further pressed that that man made a statement? He asserted a right at that time that he did not have. So it just sounds like it's fabricated, because it has nothing to do with the warrant. Nothing to do with it. They had probable cause. That's it.
I'm going to need you to clarify that a little bit.
Well, let me jump in. I think I know what he's saying. And the case actually spoke about the probable cause. Because remember, the only reason this case got to the Supreme Court is that Mr. Fernandez, who got the 14 years, appealed, saying that the cops came in without a warrant. The probable cause that they had at the time was to arrest him for domestic violence. So they could have pulled him out of the house, put him in handcuffs, and walked him to the police car, and that was that. Now, coming back an hour later, what probable cause did they have at that time?
Okay,
so that was the issue, was probable cause just leads the officer to believe that there's enough evidence to put you under arrest, not convict you. Probable cause just is an inkling that something's going wrong. So when you see a bleeding lady there and he's standing there, and most domestic violence laws now is if one person has injuries, the other person's going to jail. Okay, they'll listen to the story, but the person that's hurt, And that's not always the best thing either, because sometimes you're defending yourself and you got hurt, and they get the wrong person. But either way, those officers had probable cause to arrest Mr. Fernandez for domestic violence. Mm-hmm. Now, the question is, did they have probable cause to go searching all through the house right now? In the back of their mind, like Katie said in the beginning, they had an ulterior motive. They're investigating an armed robbery, and they're trying to figure out, how do we get in this house and see if we can find a gun and a knife and everything else? So they removed this man from the situation, took him down to jail, and came back an hour later and start talking to this lady. That was the issue. So there's two separate probable causes that we're dealing with.
Mm-hmm.
And just a question on that one, Kenneth. If there's two separate probable causes, would the return visit evidence count?
Which evidence?
The evidence about the robbery. What they found in after arresting him and after going back there and getting access to the house, would that could be considered legal,
yeah,
or would that? Okay.
Well, in this, the facts in this particular case was that he watched the man cash his check, then he went and confronted the man, right? Then he called his boys out. They jumped him, and then Mr. Fernandez was seen running through an alley, and he went into the apartment. So when the cops came, there was a man sitting out there, and he kind of pointed and said he went up there to that apartment. That's enough probable cause. They know a robbery just occurred. They went up there. They see this dude who they had gotten a description of. So they had enough, if they wanted to, get the warrant to be able to go in. It doesn't give you enough to just go running through someone's house. I mean, running through someone's house, unless you're in hot pursuit of somebody, sometimes you see that on TV, if a person runs through a bunch of apartments and they're chasing you, if they run through your apartment, the guy just robbed a bank and ran through your house, the cops can follow them through your house. They don't need a warrant because they're in hot pursuit. But while they're running through your house chasing this guy, you got a bag of cocaine sitting on your table, they're coming back. They're going to say, we ran through here chasing Mr. Jones, but while we were running, we saw that cocaine on your table. At that point, they don't need a warrant for that either because they've seen it in plain view.
Okay, so now let me ask you a question about that. In that case, if they brought him in, and like you just said, in plain view, they saw the cocaine, they were arresting him for another situation, would they then have to go back and get a warrant or just do what they did, pretty much?
They saw it in plain view right then. I mean, you can always get a warrant. That's your safety net so that you won't be challenged by a defense attorney in court. However, there are many times where you don't need a warrant because there's something called exigent circumstances. Exigent circumstances means if the evidence can be destroyed by the time you go get your warrant, then there's an exception where you can go in and stand there or either throw the people out of the house and get the warrant or just grab it because you see it right there in front of you. You know, I had a case like that where I had a client who he called because someone broke in his house and ransacked his whole house. So he called the police. He was the victim. So the cops come there to take the report. They're taking pictures and whatever. And then they saw a little bud, a little weed sitting there, and they arrested him. You know,
wow.
So he voluntarily brought the cops in his house because he's a victim. And then the cops, you know, instead of, you know, investigating the whole thing, they go, whose weed is that? And, I mean, it was a little bud, and they put the guy in handcuffs. So,
well, I would like to know how that case turned out.
He got thrown out after a while because, I mean, no jury's going to say, wait a minute, this guy just got his house robbed and everything, and you charging him for a crime? I mean, come on, why don't you use
go
find that burglar.
Right, that's where the blurred lines come in. That's where everything starts to just get blended in. It's like you can't be a victim and get help because, you know, and I'm not speaking, please don't get me wrong, I'm not speaking about a criminal that something happened to him and then he calls and he just committed a crime himself. You know, I'm not speaking on that. But I'm speaking on the fact, like, if somebody just got robbed, beat up, you call a cop and the cop comes in and says, well, you have an illegal substance here. You know, I mean, this is where, you know, it starts to become like, how do we bridge this gap between the people who are supposed to legally enforce safety and, you know, you doing your part as a citizen, but you're getting ripped apart for doing your job because of something else. And I'm not speaking, like I said, on things that are big and matter and can affect the community. I'm speaking about things like what you just mentioned. It's getting to the point now where nobody knows what to do anymore. A little girl can be arrested in front of a person.
Well, the basic rule, Katie, is don't break the law. I mean, you know, if you got drugs in your house and you call the cops, hey, you're rolling the dice. I've had cases, the craziest cases, as a prosecutor and a DA, where a case came where a person's car was stolen. I said, all right, what happened? And by the time I get through the story, it's some dude wanted a couple of rocks to smoke and said, you can take my car for an hour, and the guy didn't bring it back until the next day. So he calls the cops and says, someone stole my car. Well, it was because you traded it for some drugs. I mean, no, the guy didn't really steal your car. I mean, it's crazy things like that. So if you're going to be breaking the law and you pick up the telephone, you got to be prepared to deal with the consequences. Okay, so there's just some people just basically out there doing stupid stuff. And then they cry that their rights are violated. No, not really. You're doing stupid stuff. My concern is for the people who are not doing anything wrong. And as we mentioned before, that's for any citizen, but particularly for our young black men who are not doing anything wrong. They're minding their business, but they see that there's some perception. You fit the stereotype of looking like a gangster. Just because you're standing out on the street, you know, talking or whatever. I mean, when I grew up in Brooklyn, we all sat out on the stoop. The kids don't do that no more. But, you know, cops could roll up on you. You know, down here in Florida, three or four black kids together, they start doing a gang investigation. They start taking names. Are you in a gang? Why? Because you're standing out there talking. So the real issue is how the cops perceive the people that they're serving. You know,
and there goes that word. There goes that word. Now, that's the other concern that came up. You, as you know, Ken, I put out a pre-broadcast topic question before I come on the air. I want to see and get the seeing and the feeling of what people think. You just said one very key word, perceive. Okay, perceive. Now, lately with the cops, their perception, quote, unquote, has led to many things that really bring out what's in them. Not what's in the law, but what they personally believe. And this is the thing. Like, how does a law go out where you can figure out what a cop thought? Or, you know, I believe that the last time you spoke on the Michael Dunn verdict, one of the things you said was that a jury would have to believe that a reasonable person, or what would a reasonable belief be, you know? But the thing is, then there's that little blurred line there where, you know, how do you know what a person believes is reasonable? Too many lives are being lost and too many crimes are going ignored because everybody's focusing on something that's personal to them. And this is where now this ruling has just added, I believe, fuel to a fire.
Well, we're all human beings, and as I tell people before, we don't get it right in this country all the time, but I'd rather be here than anywhere else. There's some countries you don't get a jury. They said you did something, they take you out back and shoot you. So I'm glad that we're here in this country, although we got a long way to go. There's always some bad apples out there that are going to, you know, let their personal, okay, biases and racist feelings take control, and sometimes they get a gun and a badge, and it comes out. So we have to do, you know, a better job screening, you know, who we give that authority to. You said earlier that that's a lot of power, and it is a lot of power. The founders of the Constitution and the formers who were writing it were used to oppression by England. So the first thing they had to say was, look, we don't want the government intruding and bothering us. And if you do, you better have a high reason to do it. That's why the highest burden in any legal system is that to prove a person is guilty of a crime. You have to be proven guilty beyond and to the exclusion of a reasonable doubt. That's a high burden. The only thing on top of that is beyond a shadow of a doubt.
Okay? Right.
So that means that everybody has to do their job. The cops do their job. The prosecutors do their job. The jury sits and listens. And sometimes, you know, in certain cases, you know, we get outraged in the media. Like I said on the other show when we were talking about, you know, the Trayvon Martin and the Jordan Davis case, the thing that upsets me about that, and that's a tragedy that any time any child of any color loses their life for something stupid like that. But we only hear it on the media. They were talking more about it on national cable news than people were talking about it here in Florida. Because every day you get black kids shooting black kids. That ain't on TV. And we don't seem to be doing anything about it. And so when, you know, when we see the two colors there, we automatically jump and we're in outrage. And then after a few weeks, we go back to what we were doing before. So I think all of us need to sit down and start addressing some of the issues. One, the stereotypes that people have, which is formed out of ignorance. You know, they don't know different cultures. You know, and that's why a lot of times, you know, in the southern states, you get New Yorkers and people come down here, they don't understand that culture. A lot of cops down here haven't been out of one or two counties that they've been in. So they get a gun and a badge, they see you with your New York plates, and they have, some of them are already prejudiced to Northerners and New Yorkers.
So we
got to address that. You know, we got to address that issue, that perception that if you're on I-95 with a New York tag, you must be running drugs. You know, or I'm just coming to see grandma. Why are you committing a crime? And if you're in a night car, and you happen to be a minority, well, you got some problems.
Well, that's a problem up here in the north too. It's really sad, but there's something that you mentioned earlier. And funny, you're the first person on the other side of the law that's actually said it. But I have said this quite a bit, and I do believe that cops coming in should be prone to a lot more screening tests before they get accepted as a cop. There's way, you know, the same way government, big high-powered positions have these extensive tests and pre-screening and pre-qualification tests, whatever it is that they can see in a person based on, I don't know, ink blot tests or things to that effect where they can determine whether you may be a danger based on what you interpret certain things as. They need to put these type of things in for policemen as well. Because
they are doing that. I mean, with some of the newer, bigger departments, they're giving them cultural training and things like that, which is long overdue. But a lot of smaller places, you know, whoever's the sheriff that's there, you know, like in New York, you take the test, you wait on the test, you go to the academy, you got to be selected, okay? But in a lot of small towns, you just go and get a certificate from a community college, you fill out an application, and if they want to hire you and you're related to cousin so-and-so, you got a gun and a badge.
Oh, yeah.
and that's dangerous.
There's a panelist waiting to speak to you, so I'll speak to you on that. I'm going on a question.
Okay.
Welcome to the show, caller. You're on the air.
Hello, this is Bianca. I was listening to the discussion. You know, I've heard your guest mention about majority of police officers are good, which I agree with it. But when you have communities that want to establish citizen review boards, it's the majority of police officers in many cases, especially fraternity, that's against those things. And the only reason why is because the citizens feel that when the police say they will police their own, Well, they don't have confidence in the fact that that would happen. Another point, you got that famous code of blue where if it wasn't there, then good cops would be able to tell on the ones that's doing inappropriate things. Sure, you agree with that, but it don't happen like that. You know, if a police officer is in court, cops will come and stand around the perimeter of the courtroom and show support, especially if his goodwill is being questioned at a trial or pretrial. And one other thing, in Chicago and Cook County, they had an infamous operation that went on in the prosecutor's office. And as it was reported in the Chicago Tribune, it was called Nigger by the Pound. And you being a prosecutor yourself, sir, I don't know if you're familiar with it, but this is how this worked. The prosecutor's office, the prosecutors had an office pool, just as if you would have a pool on the Super Bowl. And what prosecutor that convicted 4,000 pounds of black meat the first in 30 days would win the pool. Now, that did go on, and you can look it up today and through the archives of the Chicago Tribune. I want you, on those three little points, what's your opinion on those?
Well, the first thing with the Civilian Review Board, and again, I'm down in the Tampa, Florida area, but having been up in New York, I could tell you that there is no big code of blue down here. They lock up cops down here. They had one. There was a story a number of years ago, I think it made national news, where I believe it was the chief of police down in Miami or somewhere who was African-American. He had went to Disney, and they pulled him over. The sheriff's office pulled him over. He was off duty for some traffic violation, and they locked him up. He's the chief of police. So there's not really code blue down here. They will lock up cops, and that's what makes news down here. Up in New York, though, and having been involved with the department, yes, there is a code blue that is there. I don't necessarily agree with it, but when you come into that environment, they see it as an us and them type situation. I had a lot of cops who lived out in Long Island in the suburbs. You know, they view going to work in the city like going in the jungle. And when you have that type of mentality, you tend to treat other people, you know, less than what you are. Things that you would do in Brooklyn, you wouldn't do out there on the island where you live. So I have a problem with that. But the civilian review boards, I think, are necessary because there should be a check and balance. The last story you talked about, I had never heard of that, and I can just tell you, you know, as a former prosecutor, I mean, they should march those people out in handcuffs and take their bar licenses away, you know, for anything that is out there.
They didn't. I think Governor Rand, before he had his trial, I think he commuted a sentence of a lot of African-Americans that was in the jails in Illinois State. But this did happen. It was called the flip side of a flip side of a trial. And the action was the name of the action was called Nigger by the Pound.
Mm-hmm.
And a reporter who was working in the prosecutor's office was going through a desk, and he found a scale. And he asked, well, what is this scale for? Then another employee there told him exactly what went down. So, and that's just
what we
know.
That's a tragedy. And I'm surprised in a big city like that. That's something that you would think that people say, oh, you hear in the South, and the South is like this or that. I can tell you, and I had spoken to Katie about this before, being a New Yorker, you know, I found a lot more racist activity towards me when I was in New York than I have seen when I'm in Florida. And, you know, like there's a different sections. You can't go in. You know, you can't go over to Bay Ridge. You can't go over to Howard Beach. You can't be over here at a certain time where things will happen. And likewise, white people, they shouldn't be up, you know, in Harlem or Bed-Stuy. Somebody's going to say something about this or that. Down here, you know, in Florida, I don't know, you know, in a lot of other places, but
You know, people tend to be respectful. You're always anywhere in this country going to have those people that are still stuck in the 1800s, and those are the people you have to deal with. And as far as the police are concerned, they should never be on the police force if that's their mentality, or the prosecutor should never be in the prosecutor's office for the activities that you explained. But unfortunately, there are bad apples out there, people that abuse their power. The power goes to their head. The badge goes to their head. And I believe that you're correct, that there should be some check and balance, civilian review boards, people that would be sit there to listen to these cases. And New York City, I know they do have the civilian review board, but a lot of smaller police departments, they don't have that. You police your own. And
well, sometimes they give you. Sometimes they establish the review board, but they don't give the review board the ability to, what do you call it?
Make a final decision?
No, when you call them in for, what do you call it when you call a person in to be questioned?
To subpoena them?
Yeah, subpoena. They don't want them to be subpoenaed, and of course some other reason,
right,
too. And, you know, I guess that's about that. I wanted to ask you something else, but it kind of skips my mind right at the, oh, one other thing. Prosecutorial misconduct.
Mm-hmm.
Prosecutors should not have that immunity. They should be able to face criminal charges just like anybody else, because I can name off a lot of – I'm here in the St. Louis area. And there's been many cases where prosecutors have left evidence out, has done this, done that, and Randy Moss here in St. Louis, where you got had three black men in a case. Two of them already been executed, and one is scheduled to be executed. But we found out that this prosecutor was doing some things that was below the belt, if you want to call it like that.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, there is prosecutorial misconduct. There are, you know, different check.
But they got that immunity.
They don't have total immunity now, because any judge or any other attorney, most attorneys, when you take your oath, you take an oath that even if it's your friend, if you see another attorney doing something, you got to turn them in. And judges will watch, and then, you know, the first thing, the case will be overturned. But if it looked like someone did something intentionally, sitting in their office as a prosecutor and using that office to pretty much violate someone's rights, that you're not immune from that. You know, a lot of people say they want to sue the cops for a false arrest, or you know, if there's a false charge by a prosecutor. If they're just doing their job and the cops brought in a case and they believe that, you know, this is the fact and there's no hanky-panky, no, then they get that immunity. However, if you just drum up a charge and go and target someone and hide evidence or manufacture evidence, you don't have immunity for that.
Absolutely. I agree with you on that one, Ken. And it's like there are so many things, like we were speaking about earlier, that does offset the good that police do. And there are so many more now. And I'm not sure if we could say it's more the young, eager cops that are coming in now, or the ones that have been on the force for so long and it's gotten to them. But mainly when you see these front page racial or otherwise corrupt incidents going on, it's usually the young bloods,
mm-hmm,
that's coming in.
Well,
you know,
yeah.
It's
on training. Yeah. It's how they're trained. If you're trained correctly, most police officers have to go in what they call field training. So you go out with another senior officer to be taught the ropes. Now, you're only as good as your teacher. So if the person you got is not showing you the right way and showing you the shortcuts, you're going to grow up doing the shortcuts. And that's how your career is going to be. If you don't know the right way, okay, and you learn from someone else and say, oh, it's okay, you don't have to do this, you don't have to follow the book on that, that's how we create, you know, some of those people that are out there. But I think that there's a sense of sensationalism going on now. I don't think that every American who is not black or Hispanic is a racist, which a lot of people will get on. The media sensationalizes things. You know, I think, as I have said on a number of different shows, is that we have to start a dialogue, a discussion about the differences that we have so people are educated. But when you get on outside, you know, people that are militant, you know, and they just want to, you know, protest and do, you know, knock out windows and crazy stuff, and then you get white folks who just say there is no racism, You had Martin Luther King. Y'all got a day now, so there's no more racism. Let's move on. They're ignorant, too. We have to sit down and deal with some of the ignorance that is in the minds of people today.
Well, I don't think you're ever going to solve that ignorance, but I tell you what I think that yourself may want to contemplate on doing, and that's convening young black males and telling them what the law is and what they should not do and what they should do. And, you know, and like this case with this music, I mean, tell them, I would tell my son, look, if you drive down the highway, you can play, but when you move, come into a place where there's people, turn the stuff down, because some people don't even want to hear it anyway. You know, here where I am, we have some all-black community. Guess what? They got loud music ordinance because the black kids that live in the community don't even have respect for the people in their own community. So they have to create these ordinance where they give them tickets and torn their cars and all that kind of stuff. So there's some things that children should just do. That way you at least avoid the conflict, even if you think you're right. I mean, just leave it alone, and so you can go on by your business and live.
No, sir. I don't agree with that assessment whatsoever, and you brought this up on the previous segment. Absolutely not. Now, I can understand.
Well, I was asking the officer, ma'am. What do you think, sir?
You know what? Every single time we get up here, this is my show, and you do need to understand that everybody gets a shot. Now, you had a turn to speak. It's someone else's turn. Now,
well, that's why I asked him. What do he think about that?
That's what I was in the middle of saying, sir. Now, I'm going to tell you this. I don't agree with people blasting music, not because it's the kids that need to learn how to do something, but because it's just rude and offensive to other people. It's not right for you to go down your block and blare it in other people's ears in space. Absolutely not. But to teach our children that what not to do to get a bunch of black males together, why? Because cops don't know how to control their racism? Absolutely not. Our children have a right to live. Okay, what do you say? What are you going to say? Go get the white males that blast punk rock music on public transportation, not to say anything to them because they're white. Is that
You know, I was in a school last week, and you know what I taught the 11th graders? I told them to turn the music down, and guess what? They agreed.
And that's what it should be, but not for what you just said.
I gave you the same example like I gave you. If you pull up into a public place where there's other people, turn the music down. They don't want to hear that. Then when you
absolutely
leave, turn your music up,
you
and that
said.
Way you live.
That is absolutely not what you just said. What you just told this attorney on the guest.
Well, you didn't give him a chance to answer my question.
Well, I will tell you again that you are being rude and disrespectful at this moment. Okay, I was in the middle of speaking. Now, what you just said was you need to get a bunch of black males together. If you don't know what you're saying.
No, you're right. I said that he needs to go into a school, and we have officers do that all the time. They talk to I said go into
a school.
Well, let me rephrase it again.
What you said was get a bunch of black males together and tell these children what not to do. That's like telling our children, as a black teen, you need to walk up to a cop to ask for help with your hands and your hands at attention or out or do whatever. You don't have the right to tell a person.
Well, let me tell you some things we have taught children.
You do not have the right to tell a person how to live. You have the right to tell a person they cannot commit a crime against somebody else, disrespect the person, put their hands on them, or anything to that effect, or break a law. If you don't like a behavior, it's offensive, you can kindly ask a person, like any other human being with respect would do, and say to that person, can you turn the music down, please? If they are doing something illegal, it's something that needs to be addressed on a legal basis.
We have parents here, ma'am. We have parents here that tell their male children to take your driver's license and your insurance card and put it over the sun visor. When the police stop you, turn the interior lights on and let down all the windows. We tell children that in classrooms.
And what does that have to do with you telling this guest of mine to get a bunch of black kids together?
Because he's down in the state of Florida, and I asked him, why don't the police organizations get together and teach children like what we're teaching them here when they're driving, how to react that way they stay out of it? We tell women, when the lights come on behind you, don't stop on a dark road. Find a lighted parking lot and pull up on the parking lot. down there, why come we don't tell the children that when you pull up onto a public spot, turn your music down?
Then maybe you should have rephrased that, because what you said specifically was...
No, you heard what you wanted to hear, Katie.
Oh, really? You need to listen to the archive, because you do this all the time.
All right. Well, officer, we'll ask him, what do you think about that?
Well, I agree that, and I think, you know, I think it was the phrasing of it. I agree that we need to, you know, educate our young people, because a lot of them, some of them are disrespectful. I mean, we live in a time now where, I mean, when I was growing up, you know, neighbors saw you doing something, you get your butt whipped. And
absolutely.
When you get home, you know, your mama whip your butt because the neighbor had to do it. And don't let a teacher have to call the house for nothing, because you're in really big trouble. But today we have, unfortunately, a lot of parents, not all parents, but a lot of parents who's so busy worrying about who could, you know, say something to their child instead of teaching that child a certain thing. So I'm in agreement in that we need to sit down and be able to talk to kids. I don't like the loud music when I pull up. I'm sitting at a red light, my whole car is shaking because that's what you're listening to, and your window is up and my car is still shaking. There are ordinances everywhere, and so I think they should be educated, because what you're doing is asking the police to stop you, because you are breaking the law when it's that loud. I mean, it's, first of all, you're killing your hearing. But, yeah, kids need to do that. And if you're on the road, sure. But when you pull up to a 7-Eleven or a place and the whole place is shaking, you know, yeah, you should turn your music down. But if you don't, on the other hand, okay, I'm not coming up to you. I mean, it's none of my business. I went in there to get my soda. I'm getting in my car, and I'm driving away. So I think that we have to be careful on how we interact with people. You know,
absolutely.
Then when you get the wrong type person coming up, like in Jordan Davis' case, okay, I don't know how loud the music was, but what I heard from that case is he just didn't like the type of music it was. That's when we have a problem. The guy's coming in with racist attitude. Look, I don't like that type of thug music or whatever he called it. Then you get a different situation. And sometime when our kids are together, there's three or four of them, we mouth off a little too loud, and we get into altercations we don't have to get into. You know, we don't have to stop and confront every person. You know, that's not the time to sit there and just, you know, get your rights out there. You got crazy people out there. You got
absolutely
crazy people out there that will
absolutely
take your life. And there ain't no music worth my kid's life. I know that.
Absolutely, Ken, and I agree with that on a whole general assessment. Kids need to be taught how to behave. They need to be respectable. We need that village for our kids nowadays, absolutely. But to be able to sit there and tell them that something they like has to be refrained when you get around a certain person because of X, Y, and Z, absolutely not. I'm going to tell you this. I have a problem with motorcyclists that come down a residential street and rev up as soon as they get past people. Okay, and that's loud and annoying and definitely rude. No one stops them. Nobody tells them that they need to stop revving in certain areas.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we
you
don't.
Know,
I mean, the kids should not be on the street and trying to get into confrontations. A lot of these young people, it has nothing to do with black or white or the type of music.
Absolutely.
You have to, first of all, have considerate. You know, that's why I agree with the gentleman to a certain extent, in that it's not teaching them what not to do or what other people like or not like. Some of it's common courtesy and common sense, which a lot of young people don't know. That's black and white. A lot of these young people, they have no training. They're disrespectful to older people. And so a lot of the confrontations they get into, they didn't have to be in if they just used some common sense. But when you have people now on the other side, you know, that come up and start confronting you about music and things like that because they don't like the music or don't like the way you look, then, you know, at that point, they have a right to be out there just like anyone else, and they don't have to bow down because someone doesn't like this or that. But I think both sides, we can avoid a lot of conflict if both people, you know, both sides just use a little common sense.
There's another panelist coming in for you, Ken. Hang on a second, okay?
Okay.
Welcome to the show, Callie. You're on the air.
Good evening, Katie. This is Altarik Atkins calling in.
Oh, hello, Altarik. How are you?
Fine. Just listening. I like the viewpoints that's being displayed. And I was just thinking about something, what was said about us having to be taught and having to teach our children. It kind of made me think. And I said, man, is this going back to a time where we had to be regulated, where we couldn't even smile in front of people, and and different things like that years ago. We couldn't congregate. And, I mean, I've seen different things like that since I've been here, since I've been up north, so many that go so many years back. And I know it'll be because they'll say because of the drug trade. But when I went back to visit home, I didn't see people of color. I seen Mexicans walking the street. I didn't hardly see any blacks walking the street. You couldn't stand on the corner and even talk for 3 minutes without the police telling you, you have to move, you got to move on. It's like you can't even be in the streets. Here where I'm at now, in the South, I tell you what my eyes have seen. In the South, if you are in certain areas, you best believe you're going to be messed with. So on the side of town where I stay at, you know, you're gonna get stopped. Somebody's going to stop you, whether you're walking or you're driving the strip of area where I stay at. They constantly make stops here, but guess what they're always going to say? Area of town. Now, this is not as wild as what I see in many places, because I live in the North and the South. But certain areas are concentrated on. I seen a chart one time. My history is not the best history, but I left that history alone, you know, many years ago. And I've seen how different things go. You come into the station, you see certain areas with those pegs. And these are the areas that's considered high-risk areas. But then there's good people that live in those areas as well. And they get even messed with at times. So, you know, I don't like when somebody says this, because I've seen people on a TV show say about 2 weeks ago, well, we didn't have to. They say, well, do y'all have to talk to y'all kids about, you know, how to, you know, if a cop comes up on you and you know, he's pulled you over and stopped you. And the white people that was on the show, they said, no, we never had to talk to our kids about that. Then why is it like that where we even have to be teaching these type of things?
Absolutely. And I'm going to tell you right now, I've seen quite more unruly Caucasian kids than I've seen African-American kids. I've seen it. There's two examples I'm going to give you. Kenneth, you're in the law, so do you remember the Howard Beach killing in 89?
Yes.
Okay. Here's a little scary thought for me and, you know, hopefully people listening. Now, John Lester was the head of that mob that went after, those of you that don't know, there was an African-American child that apparently was breaking the law because he was dating a white girl. Okay, in 1989, now, we're not talking civil rights era. Now, 1989, this boy was seen, Michael Griffith was his name. He was an African-American teenager. He was dating a Caucasian girl, okay? Now, about maybe 2 or 3 days later, and I'm going to tell you what the 2 or 3 days mean in a minute, I see this news story about John Lester being the head of a person wielding bats and all sorts of weapons after this one boy saying, nigger, go home, kill the niggers, do whatever, get out of here, stay out of your own way. Howard Beach was one of those concentrated areas. Now, scary thing for me, my father's a pastor, okay? Every single Sunday night, we used to go on our way home, stop at the Lindenwood Diner where John Lester worked. John Lester just told my father that he wanted to take me on a date. Now, mind you, I'm an African-American Latina, okay? All right. So he says to my dad he wants to take me on a date, only to kill a black guy later for dating a white girl. So it was really horrible to know that this baby-faced person, and that's exactly how the newspaper described him, because he was baby-faced. He looked like the Mad Magazine kid. All right, freckles and everything. And to know that he asked my dad for one of his daughters to go date him or do whatever, only to know that he would kill my kind in a minute. So imagine if he had charmed me to that point. This is what we were living with. Now, 15 years later, he wants to prove that the past is behind him, so he's dating what the newspaper emphasized as a very dark-skinned Bangladeshi girlfriend. And he's moved out of America. That's one. Number two, one of the things I do notice with concentrated areas, as you said, Kenneth, and you said, Al Tariq, is right here in New York City, do you not realize that Long Island is like its own little culture?
Yeah, it is.
Okay, you can't go in there. That's like Little Florida in New York. Okay, my nephews went to go to, I believe it's Skate Key or Skates USA, one of the skating rinks out there in Hicksville or Lynbrook, and they had to walk on the street because the sidewalk had some construction going on. And one of my nephews is very dark skinned by the same sister, and the other one is very light skinned, same father and everything, but they're just two different complexions because there's culture. They're walking in the middle of the street to try to get around a cement, broken cement that had tape around it for people to walk around. As they were doing that, here comes a driver around the corner and screams, "Niggers, get out the way." Now, this is modern day 2014, and we're still hearing that nowadays, and this is all they were doing, were stepping around a block. This is garbage. Okay, so for us, what are we supposed to tell our children in that respect? Make sure when you walk around a construction block site that you don't look too black. I mean, that is the whole situation. And then there was a cop sitting right there when they went to go and explain that these guys nearly ran them over and what they said. And the cop was saying, just pretty much be careful where you walk in this town. So how the hell do we sit here and know what exactly it is we're supposed to do? They're not breaking the law. What is it? You know, we're too black to be in a neighborhood. We're born black. That's a crime.
Well, unfortunately, Katie, those things are realities that are out there. I have four boys, okay? Mm-hmm. The oldest one is 24 or so, and they came up in Queens. Then now they're out in Vegas where it's crazy out there too. But, you know, I don't use them or tell them to, you know, stand up and start preaching civil rights out the street. I want my boys to come home. So I tell them to use some common sense when they're out there. When you don't confront people, don't try to do anything. And some people disagree with that. Oh, you're saying change your behavior. No, I'm not saying that. I'm just trying to be a little common sense because you got some crazy people out there, black and white and Hispanic.
Yes, you
do. They got screws loose up there. And I'd rather than be going into a funeral home with my son, because he wants to stand up and assert his rights out on the street, just, you know, a lot of times, if you're being challenged, you got to defend yourself physically, that's a different story. But to
Absolutely.
Be out there sometimes, a lot of these kids, when they're in groups, you know, it's that mob mentality. When it's a group of y'all, y'all do things that you wouldn't do by yourself. And that's both sides, black, white. They'll do things, and then things escalate. When I was coming up, you had a fight, you took your fist out, maybe a stick or something, you beat them, you had a swollen lip, and you went home. Now these kids are running around with guns. You know, you brought up Howard Beach. I'd never go over there. My mom would kick my butt. There's no reason to go over there because I knew what was going on. Didn't mean I wasn't proud of who I was and my heritage and all that. No, it's just
right.
Some things are common sense.
That's the best way to be. My daughter here is a concealed carry. Her friend is concealed carry. And I specifically instruct her, leave confrontations alone. You've got that for your protection. It don't make no sense to, I would rather get out of somebody's way and go on by my business and live and not have to go through all this rigmarole and so forth. Just get out of the way and let the fool, if that's what you want to call them, a fool, go ahead and do what they're going to do. Just avoid them. It's very simple.
Absolutely. That is exactly the way it should be. Prevention is the best medicine, they say, and I agree with you, Ken. In the event that you have to defend yourself, different story. But you shouldn't be going around being stupid enough to go try to show, you know, bang on your chest and show what is. Because now we get back to what the topic is about tonight. You get involved in something like that, even if you were defending yourself or you said a little too much or somebody says something smart and you're not going to walk away looking like no Trump, you wind up getting into this confrontation. Somebody walks off. Next thing you know, the police are in your apartment looking for one thing and finding another. Then it's a whole big spiral downhill. But with all that being said, everybody has a right to be who they are. And that's the one thing that it tends to be a problem nowadays. It is a problem. So with this ruling being in place, I don't think that that's going to help those people who are that way, unless higher-ups now, especially in light of this new ruling, starts to put a little more pressure on preventative medicine. And that means screening your cops a little more often, making sure that if they showed a bad day, they take a leave or do whatever the case is and get that power removed until they get it together, if they ever will.
Well, everybody, we have to police the police, and that is there. And as the topic is saying, you know, with regard to the decision, you know, the Supreme Court has made a bunch of crazy decisions lately. The whole issue about cutting back the voting rights in the southern states that were, you know, historically, you know, biased towards minorities. This court is pretty much shaving away, you know, pretty landmark, sacred constitutional amendments and rights that we have under the Bill of Rights. And what it does is it fuzzies the gray area. And what happens is the people on the street, the people with the guns, get to interpret what the gray area is. And anything that violates our rights, whether that's coming in your house, that's the most sacred thing. You should be safe in your home, have privacy in your home without the government or the cops coming in there for whatever reason. And even if you're doing something wrong, you shouldn't be doing something wrong. But even then, we have a set of rules that everyone needs to follow. And once we get to this issue where prosecutors are doing the wrong thing, cops are doing the wrong thing, then we're on this slippery slope where it's just going downhill, and that's where we as a country are going to have a problem. We're going to turn into the haves, the have-nots, the thems, the us's. And once we get into that, it's going to be almost like a war zone, like a third world nation where it's us and them. I mean, we have to start to learn who's your neighbor. Let's go back to just basic principles. You know, what happened to sticks and stones? You know, every time someone says something to you, you know, when I was growing up, you say something about my mama. We got to get in a fight. No, we don't. Because my mama used to beat me when I had a fight about that. He goes, you don't know your mama? So what are you up there doing like a fool? You know, and so sometimes a lot of times we have a lot of anger in us, and that's a whole different topic, you know, as to when we get out there. Some people just want to get out and just start banging heads.
Absolutely. And nowadays, because of all the different changes in the village that raises that youth, we have to deal with a lot more. I got to prove myself. I'm pretty much going to stand up for myself. You know, we spoke about the change in that. There's a lot more younger single parents. Okay, who are more of these older parents nowadays are trying to regain their youth and become their children's friends, and they're missing the whole point of where that boundary is supposed to be. Like you said, you got into a fight defending your mother, and your mother whipped your butt because it's stupid. You know, they can call my mother all they want. Do they know me? Do you know me?
Mm-hmm.
Why, if it doesn't bother me, why should it bother you? I used to get that from my mother all the time. What are you fighting for? Are you kidding me? What's the matter with you? You know?
Well,
and
I would say, Katie, that stereotypes are bad. But the problem that I have with our young people is that their behavior plays right into the stereotype. So the stereotype is wrong, you know, and we fight that we shouldn't have them. But then a lot of our young people, not all of them, but a lot of them will go out there and do exactly what these people say we are, and then those people feel justified in harming our kids. But, you know, kids also have to, I mean, you don't have to walk around with your pants around your ankles. I mean, with your underwear showing. I mean, all those things. I have people come into court. None of my clients, if they ever walk in a courtroom like that, I'm not their lawyer. You know, and this is not talking about culture and whatever, but you have to understand where your surroundings are. You wouldn't walk into church that way. You wouldn't walk into a funeral that way. So you come into court, flip-flops on, pants hanging down, and you want some respect from the people that you're there for. I just think that we need to use a little more common sense. That's all.
Yeah, because there are times to be one thing and there are times to do another. Listen,
right.
I have an issue with employers using Facebook to qualify you as a candidate because I'm like this. Unless, of course, it's one of those daycare or nursing home or government jobs where, you know, national security is in their hands. But listen, I know how to behave in an office, but after work, I'm a sports buff. I'm a New York Knicks diehard. You talk about my Knicks, I'm going to sports trash talk on Facebook. Does that mean that if I'm going to go into my 9-to-5 job, I'm going to be talking the way I talk with my friends and family on Facebook? Absolutely not. That is supposed to be your sanctuary, your wind-down time, your sacred castle. That is supposed to be what it is. And you brought something up regarding the Fourth Amendment. The Constitution was this country supposed to be absolute law. And I have seen people who are supposed to be in the law pretty much find those little gray areas, like you said, to alter it somehow, to reword it, to make it fit their purpose. That's the problem. And if we walk around telling our children that they have to alter who they are in order to comply or to do whatever, rather than tell them be who you are but know how to respect certain things, then we also are giving a problem.
Well, it says that on the building, the Supreme Court, equal justice under law. The problem with it is that it's not always equal. The Lady Justice is supposed to be blind with the scales, but a lot of places she's peeking under the blindfold, and depending on who's in front of her, get different justice. So that's why I'm an attorney. I try to fight that. I don't care what color person's in front of me. You know, you violate the law, okay, then the prosecutors have to do their job, but they have to do it correctly. The police have to do it correctly. You know, and it is what it is. We're always going to have crime. Unfortunately, going to have bad cops, bad prosecutors, and we have to have more dialogue about it and to try to ferret that stuff out. And hopefully that this decision that came down doesn't open the doors for more police corruption and violation of individual rights.
I think the only way they're going to do that is if in place of them overturning something that has been, like you said, a sacred protection under the Fourth Amendment, that they need to enforce also that, listen, imbalance, we're giving you this extra authority, but at the same time, you also have to take extra care in how you use that authority. And I believe that they should have put in writing, okay, some adjustments to what now should be more enforced rules for the cops. Like you said, somebody could easily arrest a person to remove the obstacle, to take that shortcut. That shortcut might be something that's going to lead to a whole heap of other troubles. You know, so I believe that when they decided to play around with what our forefathers put into place, okay, they should have said, well, in addition to you getting this, hold on now, don't get too happy because this is what you need to do. Since you don't have to get a judge, you better make damn sure that when you go storming into someone's house, that it was for X, Y, and Z, and you need to prove that. Because as you said, I've always heard this, that the burden of proof is on the prosecution, not the defense. If a defendant could take the opportunity to shut his mouth and let his lawyer do the whole trial for him, as we know Zimmerman did, then it is up to the prosecution to come back for every one thing he doesn't say. You need to have three things that do say.
Well, and the problem with the Supreme Court rulings, I mean, once you get up to the Supreme Court, which is very hard to get a case to the Supreme Court, usually, you know, if states are saying different things or conflicting laws or if it's interesting to them, they'll take the case. A lot of cases go up, majority of them they don't take. But when they do, because that law has to govern across the country, each state has its own individual laws. And so it's hard to kind of think ahead as to every situation that might come up in all 50 states, you know, to write a law. So it's hard for them to put those instructions. What happens in a case like this, when they make a ruling, now we have to wait and see how it's applied, how it works, you know, how it works way through the system to see if it needs to, you know, have some adjustments to it. But unfortunately, you probably will see, you know, cops getting it wrong. Before this decision came out, cops are getting it wrong every day.
Yep.
You know, some of them intentionally, some just because they're not knowledgeable, but there's a lot of them that, hey, we get around to doing this, we get around to doing that. And that's the issue I have. You should never get around the Constitution. Because once we do that, we're no better than any other country.
Oh, my God. Well, perfect statement. There is a question that I want to bring up based on what something you just said, because that also was something that was in my head as well. I do know about, like federal-level laws versus local state laws, because even, you know, being in the food service when you were doing the health certification test to get your food handler certificate, one of the things that they did say was, although this is a general law, each state has their own customized portions to it because some states have different issues. So in this case, will this law now, as much as it's a law across the country, will each state now have to, like, you know, do a little tweaking to fit their customized state?
Normally that's what happens, is that the states cannot take away the rights of the Constitution or what the Supreme Court said. They can tighten things up, but they can't take away, you know, whatever the Supreme Court is saying. So a lot of times states will customize their laws to deal with their particular situation. Each legislature will get up there and they will pass different types of laws. For example, like the gun law, some states you can't carry a gun. You go to jail if you have one. You got to have a long process of getting a firearm. Whereas in other states, like in Florida, you know, you're not a felon. They do a background check. You can get a carry permit. You know, you try to do that in New York, you got to hire someone special. You're going to wait for a year. You're going to pay $2,000, even if you're a business owner. So each state, you know, can choose what to do. That's states' rights issues. But the Supreme Court, pretty much the law of the land when it comes from the Supreme Court, is to give a blanket and a guide to those states. And if a state actually makes a law that goes against that decision, it can be struck down.
Right. Okay. So there wouldn't be anything. Like, I know, well, I believe, like, in certain states, there would be different motor vehicle laws because, you know, the land spacing is way different from a place like, say, New York or California, where it's a lot more of a concrete jungle type thing. You know, you see a lot more buildings and close-knit establishments than you actually do residential houses. So if, I guess what I'm trying to ask is there any way that each of these states will have something that would be not altered but adjusted to each state? This particular ruling from the Supreme Court, I know overall that's what it is, but is there anything each state may be able to do to say, well, and this doesn't apply to us because of X, Y, and Z, you know, conditions or positions in the state?
The states can, what they do is they can give more protections to a citizen. They can't give less protections than the Supreme Court or the Constitution gives. So if a state decides that they don't want to, if they tell their cops, no, you have to get a search warrant, then, okay, there might be some fighting about that. But normally a state can give more protection to a citizen than the Constitution might say or that a Supreme Court case may say, but they can't take away those rights. They can't give less rights than what the Constitution says.
Got it. All right, I understand that because, like I said, you know, there's certain different behaviors that take place. There's actually each state may have a majority problem that the other state doesn't. You know, for example, you know, like, you need guns in, like, the more rural areas because you might have animals that come in through the woods and be on your back lawn or something to that effect, whereas in an urban area, that probably wouldn't happen as often. Not saying it wouldn't because I'm in Queens right now, and I could tell you, I've seen raccoons, and I'm going bananas. I'm like, that's like those woodsy states. Problems, you know. I'm seeing raccoons, I'm seeing certain things, but I realize why. The more that they build on these animals' natural habitats, the more that they have to come out and find a place to be. But I understand that, you know. So, yeah, I guess I can get it. Maybe if a certain state had more problems with domestic violence murders, they might give the domestic violence victim more of a shot at getting an order of protection quicker or, you know, like you said, more protection.
Well, you know, in some states we have open carry. We have people here in Missouri that have challenged, you know, walk down the street with their rifles slung over their shoulder and walk in restaurants, a group of them meet in the restaurant, open carry. Of course, sometimes police try to stop them. The owner of the establishment say, you're the only one that's causing the problem here. Directing that conversation to the police. I think Louisiana has open carry. But you're right. Some states, and that's the beauty of it. If a person don't like what's going on in one state, they can move to another one. The Constitution is designed to protect citizens from the government. The government imposing laws, taking rights away from them, because once that right is taken, you can't get it back, hardly ever.
Well, we are down to our last 9 minutes. So, Ken, I'm going to ask you for your final thoughts on any advice with the ruling, anything that anyone should know about it.
Well, basically, and I always try to tell people, you know, when you're dealing with the police, obviously, and I hear people, it shouldn't be that we, you know, African-Americans have to act different, Hispanics have to act different when you encounter the cops. In theory, if we were sitting down and having a discussion like we've been doing, yes. But let's talk about real life. When you're out there at 2 in the morning, you get pulled over. There's certain things that you can do. You know, like, you know, we said earlier, keep your hands on the wheel. I do exactly what Atkins was talking about. I turn my light on, my interior light at nighttime. My windows come down. My hands are on the steering wheel. Okay? because I know both sides of it. I know walking up to a car at 2 in the morning in a uniform. I don't know what's in that car, and I want to go home to my family, okay? And we have our share of police funerals as well. You know, we're going into a house or stopping a car, you know, a cop who's doing nothing wrong gets killed because the guy has a warrant for suspended license or he just robbed a bank and the cop doesn't know it. So
right.
on both sides, you have to use some common sense, put your hands up there on the wheel, be respectful to the officer, but also knowing your rights. There's no basis. An officer does not have to get in your car. He has no right to get in your car for anything. If you're stopped for a traffic violation, okay, then he can give you a ticket or let you go on that. They normally come up afterwards with saying, is anything in the car I need to know about? Can you mind if I take a look? Yeah, I do. I have an appointment I need to go to. You know, or, you know, if you say no, at that point there's no reason to get in the car. But most states will have the probable cause situation with a car that the biggest thing I come and encounter is people smoking marijuana in the car. And
right.
In states where it's not legal yet, okay, if you're going to Colorado or something like that, that's different, which I don't think you can smoke when you're driving either. I'm not sure about that. But, again, people drive around smoking marijuana in the car, which I never understand. Or they park somewhere in a public place, like a park that's closed at night, but they park in there smoking weed. So the cop's going to come up to you, and he has a reason to go into the car, you know, at that point. But as far as your home is concerned, unless they come in, you know, with a warrant, you know, then they can't come in. And with the new case, if somebody's in your house, well, now we got to get to being careful who you live with. Some of the argument made by the justices was that if someone is living in your house, if you trust them to live in your house or be in your house, then they must have authority as well. And that's where we're going to get into situations. Once we get these domestic cases going on, yes, there are real victims out there that are being abused physically, emotionally, you know, all that. But then you get situations where people just call the cops because I'm mad at you. I need them out of the house. So they call the cops. But when you pick up that phone, you know, you got to be careful because you don't know what's coming to that house. You know, you can get in trouble. They can get in trouble. And then we go to court later and say, oh, I'm sorry, get my man out, and all that. But we kind of, you know, be careful as to what situations we get ourselves into and who we let in our homes. Forget the police. Let's just talk about the regular people. Who you got in your house?
Yeah.
What they doing? You know, a lot of times the police are the danger. It's the tenants that you have in there.
I need to ask you a question, all right, because I did see a case in front of my own eyes, and I want to clarify. I understand the rule with if there are two occupants in the house and one gave permission. Let me ask you a question. Let's say that an altercation took place. Say, you know, like you invited over three friends to watch the Super Bowl that night. And I guess, you know, tempers flare because maybe one is the opposing team fan and that fan was losing and, you know, the fan team was losing. Let's say something happened. The police walk up because they don't know who belongs where, right?
Right.
And the person, I'm speaking specifically under the new ruling.
Mm-hmm.
And there's two people involved in a fight. And the person who said yes actually doesn't live there. She's just visiting for the day. Can the police still walk in on that respect?
Well, that was there's a rule on that before even this case came out. If there's something called apparent authority, so it's apparent that this person, there's no broken windows, the person doesn't look like they broke in the house. So let's say you that situation or you have a friend that's just staying over for 2 days or whatever, if the cops knock on the door and they open the door and there's no reason to believe that that person shouldn't belong there, right, then the cops have the authority to go in if that person gives consent. Remember, the police don't have to stand there and start checking leases and deeds and titles to property and who's the owner and all that. They can ask, who's the owner? Do you live here? Are you staying here? You know, those are the basic questions. But if the cops believe that the person that opens the door and gives them consent to come in should be there, the cops are not going to be held responsible. All right, they're doing their job based on what they're being told. The issue is whether or not when they come in that they try to get around the warrant by, for example, in this case, you know, if you arrest someone, get rid of the objecting person, and now, you know, kind of coerce or threaten the other people to get, you know, access to the house, then that's a problem. But, even before this case, if there's people in the house and the cops show up, you might have to come in or look around or whatever, and if someone says yes, they're not a minor, you know, they look like they're an adult, they can give consent. They're going to come on in.
Wow, so that means if I had a birthday party and I guess got out of hand, and, you know, there was that person can just say yeah, even if the owner is saying, listen, this person came for a party, they don't belong here, they got stupid.
No, well, in that case, when there's a party going on, the cops come in, and, you know, let's say there's a noise complaint from a neighbor, and the cops show up, and one of your friends, one of your guests at your party opens the door, they're probably going to ask, you know, do you live here? Because that person then doesn't live there. They're going to say, well, where's the owner? Oh, Kate, she's over there. And then you come to the door at that point. Now you've been identified as the person with authority in the house. So a party situation will be a little different. But in the case that we were talking about tonight, they both share this apartment. And so if you have three people living in the house or five people living in the house, you know, at that point, you know, there's another thing where the cops can come in and search a common area. Common area is the living room. So the person gives them authority to go in there. But if the person that they want to search, they have a locked bedroom door, you know, then that's a tricky situation as well. Whether or not that person is not there, you shouldn't be able to go in that door. So that's where this case, we're going to have a lot of cases coming up where people are going on the trial level trying to interpret this case. You know, cops are going to view it one way. Defense attorneys are going to view it another way. So we're going to get a lot of motions that come up. Suppress evidence. But if you have a locked door and someone lives in your house and it's locked, well, the cops need to go get a warrant to go in there. Unless y'all are husband and wife or boyfriend and girlfriend and you sleep in that room, they're going to ask the cop, do you sleep in that room? No, that's my brother's room. I don't go in there. And they can't go in there. So they can look in the common areas of the house, the living room, the kitchen, where everyone uses, but they can't go into a locked area without a warrant.
I ask you because the case I'm talking about was a neighbor of mine, and there was, they had a gathering. I believe it was a family member's birthday dinner or something, and the person who was visiting just for the party got drunk and said some things. I guess, you know, when families get together and there's tension, things come out when you're drunk, and the drunk visitor, okay, got into a scuffle with the host of the party, and when the police came, it's like they didn't want to hear that, listen, I'm trying to get him out of here. He's only here for the dinner, and he doesn't want, you know, you can't come to my house. Take him out of here. The police were like, you know, well, there seems to be an issue. Can we come in? And the owner said no, but the visitor said yes, and the cops went in and wind up actually arresting the owner for resistance. So
well, that sounds like a little bit, that's a different issue than kind of search and seizure in a sense. I mean, if you open the door and there's someone in there fighting or yelling or whatever, I mean, at that point, you know, it's a gray area as to what the cops can do once they, you know, get in there. If the owner says, look, if the person, if you want them to get out, is in the house, the cops got to come in to get the person out the house. Unless they then threw him out on the front porch and said, you can't come in, just take him away, that's a different story. So it depends on the fact, you know, of that case. But if you want someone removed from the house and you need the cops to help, they got to come in.
So,
to get them out.
Okay. Well, I thank you all very much for your input. Kenneth, once again, I'm honored. Every time you call in, I'm very honored and very intrigued. Your input is so real and so straight, and I appreciate it. We are down to our last 1 minute, and I want to thank every one of you for joining in. Those of you listening, thank you. Hopefully you learned something. Bottom line for what I'm hearing is, of course, obey the law. Have common sense and definitely know your rights one way or the other. That's the way we could start to make a change and protect ourselves in the process. So until tomorrow, Thursday night, everybody, be blessed, be a blessing, make a difference, and God bless you. Good night.
On the Edge, real talk about real issues.